A logo appears in bold slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. In a black and white logo, electric bolts shoot out of a radio transmitter sitting atop the revolving Earth. Words appear, an RKO radio picture. Now, a color film. Over a formation of Wildcat fighter planes, silhouetted by a sunset, titles appear. Howard Hughes presents John Wayne as Major Dan Kirby and Robert Ryan as Captain Carl Griffin in Flying Leathernecks. An Edmund Granger production, copyright 1951, RKO Radio Pictures Incorporated. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Michael Braden. Read by Nick Mills. Funded by the United States Department of Education. More titles with Don Taylor, Janice Carter, J.C. Flippin, William Harrigan, James Bell, Barry Kelly, Maurice Jarrah, Adam Williams, James Dobson, Carlton Young, Steve Flagg, Brett King, and Gordon Gebert. Screenplay by James Edward Grant. Story by Kenneth Gamet. Color by Technicolor. Music by Roy Webb. Produced by Edmund Granger. Directed by Nicholas Ray. Dedicated to the United States Marine Corps, and especially to Marine Aviation, appreciation is gratefully acknowledged for their participation and assistance which made this picture possible. Now, a sunny ocean shore.
Our story begins in the midsummer of 1942 on the Hawaiian island of Oahu. Here, the gentle surf which rolled on Waikiki occasionally drowned out the roar of planes overhead. Constant reminders of the task to be done. The Japanese had conquered the island chain to Guadalcanal, and we had to start the long climb back despite the initial lack of men and materiel. This is the story of a group of young American men who comprised the Marine Fighter Squadron, VMF 247. Men representing and represented by the American flag which flew at the base of a sleeping volcano. Unmistakable evidence that our country, then as always, would fight against aggression and all the aggressors that challenged the rights of free men.
Now in an airfield ready room.
Here it is, Matt. Come and get it.
Young clean-cut pilots in brown jumpsuits crowd around a tray of beer cans. Outside, a jeep pulls up with two officers.
Hey, here he is! Come on, give me a beer.
One of the officers strides into the ready room and stares.
Captain Griffin, being that I'm the smartest, the squadron has selected me to make a little speech of congratulation.
Attention!
The second officer enters.
Gentlemen, Major Kirby, your new squadron commander. This isn't usual, Major.
May I speak, sir?
Go ahead.
Well, this is a joke, sir. We thought when Major Hardy was injured that Captain Griffith would be in command. I mean, with the urgency and all and us on alert, well, we arranged this, or I arranged it as sort of a rib, sir, to congratulate him, if you see what I mean.
I see. Well, relax, man, and you can hang on to that beer. It's scarce enough in the islands. I know we'll see no more beer in the ready room, but this is an unusual occasion. We'll forget it. When the command meets the commander for the first time, it's like a wedding. Nobody knows how it's going to turn out. Whether it'll be a happy golden anniversary or a divorce. We'll see.
The square-jawed Kirby notices a pilot's boots.
What's this?
Red and yellow cowboy boots.
On your way to a rodeo?
Oh, no, sir. No. It's just because I got high arches. Almost all Texans got high arches. Heredity. You know, like Eskimo babies, they got thicker skins.
Okay, but don't wear them when flying.
Well, my arches are just as high in the air as they are on the ground, Major.
Not when flying.
Yes, sir.
Major, this character takes some getting used to. He's conversational. But I put up with him for two reasons. One, he's my brother-in-law. The other reason is this idiot is rich. As soon as this ruckus is over, I'm going to retire on his money.
I hope the Major knows I was just clowning about the boots.
Sure.
Kirby gives the cowboy a toothy grin. Captain Griffin ushers the Major into an office.
Thank you.
Griffin closes the door, then soberly faces his men.
This squadron has a warning order to stand by. I can tell you we will be receiving orders to move out almost any minute. Start getting your personal gear and personal affairs up to date.
Well, anyway.
The men toast Griffin, who smiles and disappears into the office.
See? You didn't get the job. Now, that's logical, since the mine's working under those brass hats working reverse.
Fellas, I think we looked a little jerky when our new CO got his first hinge at us.
I've heard about this guy. He's rugged. He was leading close air support training at North Island. He made those guys come in so close to the beach they picked up seashells in their oil coolers.
You guys are wrong. He's all right. I know he's all right.
And here's the squadron roster and table of organization. We're in good shape.
Tom?
A blonde airman enters.
May I speak to the major, sir?
Go ahead.
I'd like to thank you, sir. That letter sure helped my family. I mean, it was written in a way that... Well, it helped us all, sir, about my brother. That's what I want to say, sir.
Your brother? What's your name?
Malaki, sir. My brother's name was Joe. He served with you at Midway.
Oh, Big Joe Malaki. Good guy. Sorry. If you're half as good a man as your brother, I'll be proud to have you in my command, Lieutenant.
Thank you, sir.
Kirby squints at Griffin with steel gray eyes.
Give me a rundown on each man. Job by job.
The captain consults a notebook.
Captain Carl Griffin, executive officer.
And they call you Carl.
Griff. Captain Walter Tanner, communications officer. Good man.
Fine.
Captain Harold Jorgensen, operations officer. Major, may I speak frankly?
Sure.
It's me you're worried about, and naturally. In a spot like this, when they don't give the squadron to the exec, it's because he hasn't been recommended. Naturally, the new CO would be worried.
I like plain speaking. What was the beef?
No beef. I didn't think Major Hardy would recommend me. We just didn't mesh.
You think he acted out of personal dislike?
You know Hardy?
Kirby nods.
I don't think he ever in his life acted on an emotion of any kind. I think it was his cold, honest opinion that I wasn't up to command. I think he was wrong, but that's just a case of different opinions.
Well, that's life in these Marines. You want a combat command, and I want to sell a brass of pet theory.
Close air support for ground troops.
That's right. Here we are, so let's get the job done. The name's Dan. We'll make a squadron out of this.
What else?
Now, the men clean out their lockers.
How can you call this stuff personal affairs?
Well, this concludes my affairs in Honolulu.
I'd like to have a copy of those conclusions.
They pick up mugs with their names on them. Later, at a telegraph office.
What can you say in 10 words?
Along a writing table, crowd over a dozen airmen, all dressed in crisp khaki uniforms and neckties with side caps.
Okay, Malaki, okay.
Malaki writes a telegram. Then his family reads it.
It's from Bert. He just says he can't write for some time. Gone away, I guess.
His sister sighs.
I wonder if it's Midway like Joe.
No. Midway, we caught.
Back at the Hawaii base.
Chung, I'll see you at the crawler.
Okay, Bert.
Now, in a stateside hospital.
Mrs. Jorgensen, it's from your husband. And, of course, the 10th word is love. Shall I leave it on the table for you?
No.
Lying in bed, the young Mrs. Jorgensen takes the telegram as she cradles her baby. In Hawaii, Jorgie steps back from the counter.
Okay, Billy.
Thank you, my friend.
Short, with a round, boyish mug, Billy takes a sheet of paper. Now in the States.
It's from that cute little Billy Castle. I just love that boy.
The shapely brunette stands.
Excuse me.
Surrounded by admiring men in uniform, she posts Billy's telegram next to a bunch of others. Now, in Hawaii, another airman.
Do you think we'll have time?
Sure. We'll make the time, Charlie.
Okay, then.
Now on an Indian reservation.
Got word from your son, Charlie.
Charlie's parents listen to an agent.
He says he can't write for quite a while. But he knows that his ma and pa will know that he will act so that they can know there'll be no shame brought on his lodge. And to tell his sisters to take good care of his horses. And to keep on with their schoolwork.
In Hawaii, cowboy rips up a letter.
This raid, I'll be here all night.
Your daddy sent you a bedtime story. I'll read it to you.
Cowboy's son sneezes.
Papa says he's on a big island, but he's going to fly away very soon and then hurry back to us. But in the meantime, he wants us not to do anything wrong and to take care of each other.
The telegram only reads, shoving off, destination unknown. Hope and pray for all of us. Love, Vern.
All night, the coded messages said, urgent, urgent, urgent. It seemed hard to believe that anything was urgent on that beautiful Pacific dawn when BMF 247 sailed for Cactus Airfield on the island of Guadalcanal. But urgency there was, for the hard-pressed ground troops were holding the airstrip only by effort beyond maximum. On the 16th day of August, the battle for Guadalcanal was still very much in doubt.
In a fierce battle, Japanese soldiers fire a machine gun. A U.S. soldier uses a field phone.
Cactus Base. Richter speaking. Put Colonel Riley on.
Right here, sir. It's Colonel Richter, sir.
At the airfield headquarters.
Hello, Red. How's it going? Your overlay just got here. Let us get a look at it, and I'll call you back in a minute.
Riley faces his commander.
General, Red's in trouble. He's committed to the reserves and can't contain the Jap attack. His right flank has been turned and he's lost contact with the 42nd Marines.
The ground command will send the reserve battalion in a flanking movement through this gap. Right, Colonel?
Yes, sir.
Is there a new ETA on our air support?
No, sir, not for 2 days.
When and if you contact them, see if it's feasible to use them in a strike at the North Ridge.
Yes, sir. If there still is a North Ridge.
Now, at sea on the deck of an aircraft carrier, nearly a dozen fighter planes are scrambled for takeoff. Crewmen lower each plane's wings from their folded storage position, then attach the single-engine planes to a catapult, which slings them forward and into the air. Later, a squadron of 16 planes cruises in flights of four. The Grumman Wildcats are 30 feet long, with nose propellers and blunt, low-mounted wings. In one cramped cockpit flies Major Kirby. Now, on the ground, helmeted soldiers exchange gunfire. Americans toss grenades. A commander speaks on his field phone.
Cactus Base, this is Dogface. Request air support. Urgent.
I say again, request air support. Urgent.
The Wildcat Squadron reaches Guadalcanal.
Jigsaw 1, Jigsaw 1, this is Cactus Base. How is your fuel? Over.
Hello, Cactus Base, this is Jigsaw 1. We are okay. What do you want?
Have a request you make a strafing run on Hill 702. Runs north to south. Acknowledge out.
This is Jigsaw 1, Wilco. Jigsaw 2, 10 and 9, join on me for a strafing run. We have arrived. All other chicks, pancake. See you later.
In another cockpit, Captain Griffin consults a map. Four planes from the two front flights peel off from the rest of the squadron and descend toward the island's mountainous ridges. On a bare hillside, American troops crouch and fire their rifles. A wounded man with a bloody face is carried away. In the air, the two Wildcat pairs bank gently right and dive. The Major makes his run, flying low at the enemy ridge and gritting his teeth as he fires his guns. A Japanese gun post returns fire from behind a tree as he soars away. Now Griff swoops in, his six wing-mounted machine guns spitting flames. Enemy soldiers scurry for cover. A bright-eyed third Wildcat pilot nearly grazes the ground as he strafes the ridge. Cowboy comes in higher with his attack. After he's away, he slides up his goggles, blinks, and heaves a relieved sigh. Later, the four planes fly away. Kirby picks up his radio handset.
All jigsaws. Nice work. Prepare to pancake. Check your fuel.
One plane peels away.
Jigsaw 10, get back in formation. Acknowledge.
The bright-eyed third pilot soars off across the island.
Jigsaw 2 and 9, how is your fuel?
2 on reserve. 9, orange is sour.
We'll have to pancake. How?
At an airfield, a stocky sergeant wearing a campaign hat squints into the sky. The four Wildcats buzz the dirt airstrip, then land one by one. Dozens of Marines in grimy uniforms run out to greet them. Billy Castle and another pilot watch from the edge of a nearby palm grove. Marines direct the taxiing planes to a clearing between the airstrip and the makeshift shelters under the trees. One plane comes to a stop. The pilot cuts the engine, then climbs out. It's Major Kirby. The rumpled sergeant in the curled campaign hat meets him.
Hiya, Clancy!
How are you?
Oh, a little grayer, a little older.
Any smarter?
Haven't seen you since Midway, Major, but I'm sure glad you're here.
How you doing?
Not so good.
All right, let's have the regular beef. What are you short of?
Everything.
They duck.
Except Japs.
Soldiers sneak off.
Them mud marines will get him. Well, fancy little airstrip we got here, eh, Major?
Well, it's all ours.
So far.
This must be a pretty valuable piece of real estate.
The down payment's been pretty high. They got him.
How we set on gas and refueling?
I've only got 400 drums of Jap gas. We refuel by hand, and no spare parts either.
Give up?
I only regret I ain't got but one life to give for my country.
Save it. We need a good line, Chief.
He scans the sky.
Well, we better get these planes dispersed.
Oh, better not spread them out too much, Major. No transportation for a scramble.
Well, I don't like it. All right, get them refueled as fast as you can.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Dan!
Joe! Seems like I can't get away from you.
How's the leg?
Fine. Of course, I had a good doc after I escaped you.
Hey, you took us in pretty close. Cowboy's knees are still knocking, and so are mine.
And so are mine. Doc Curran, this is Captain Griffin, my exec.
Glad to meet you, sir.
Same here.
Doc was medic at Midway.
Oh, we gotta be nice to you, huh? Hey, fellas, come on over and meet the bartender.
All the pilots run over.
Griff, attention!
A jeep arrives, bringing the general.
Dan? Glad to see you, sir. This is Captain Griffin, my exec.
Colonel Riley, Colonel Foster, Major Kirby, Captain Griffin. Glad to see you, too, Dan. My men will go over to headquarters.
Thank you, sir.
They get in the back.
Is old Grumblegut still on the Long Island?
Yes, sir.
The jeep cruises across the broad, sun-drenched airstrip to a wooden cabin on a small rise guarded by three lookout soldiers standing like statues. The five men get out.
Dan?
Yes, sir?
I was making a tour of positions when you hit that ridge. Nice going. Get all your people in, okay?
One pilot missing, sir.
Condition red, sir.
A red flag is hoisted. The men scramble for cover as a Japanese plane strafes the airfield. A bomb explodes near them as they scurry into a bunker underneath the cabin. The heavyset general peers out.
I'm getting too old for this sort of thing.
The Zero, slimmer than a Wildcat, with rounded wingtips and red circle wing markings, lands two bombs among the trees. On the next pass, the bombs hit the cluster of U.S. planes, sending up black clouds of smoke. The men in the bunker lift their heads and warily gaze around. Kirby stands and steps outside. Two planes burn fiercely.
Get our gang, get everybody to help with those fires.
Griff sprints away across the airstrip toward the wreckage. The general frowns.
Dan? Those planes should have been dispersed better.
Yes, sir.
Pilots, some still wearing life preserver vests, swarm around the burning planes with fire extinguishers. Two more enemy planes attack.
Take that back!
The men hit the deck as bombs explode nearby. Malotki runs by Griff, who catches hold of him.
Where are you going? I'm all gas double. Let me go get him.
You'll never get off the ground.
Griff shoves him away, then picks up a fire extinguisher and sprays a wing. Later, the fires are all out.
Better get yourselves quartered. Then come back and we'll see what we can salvage out of this mess.
As they huddle around a smoldering plane, a short pilot runs up.
There's no report on Simmons from ground intelligence. I guess he's gone.
Kirby bows his head.
I guess so.
Turning, the crew-cut, lean-featured major walks through his men.
Let's go.
The bedraggled pilots follow. Later, Kirby and Griff stride together past the collapsed, sooty wreckage of a Wildcat. At the unharmed plane next to it, Airman Nalotki paints the words Big Joe on the engine cowling.
It's okay, isn't it, Major?
Couldn't think of a better name.
Hope I can get a couple of meatballs to put up beside it. I think my pa would be pleased if I kind of even things up.
Hope so.
You will, Nalotki.
Hey, cowboy! Ernie! Come here! Hey, Billy! Hey, hey! I'm back!
The men dash over as a jeep roars up, bringing the missing pilot. He jumps out with his parachute under his arm. His buddies mob him.
You been taking a walk, boy?
Well, it was such a nice day.
Oh.
I bailed out when my tanks went dry.
Yeah?
After I splashed a nip.
You got one!
A whole platoon of mud marines can confirm it.
My hero.
You fellas would want to take a little word of advice from a combat-hardened veteran, would you?
They dump his chute over his head. Griff smiles as he and Kirby approach them.
Yes, Major, I just got a nip cut.
Knock it off. There's no quarters for you to be confined to, but you're under arrest. And get ready to face a general court, because that's what I'm recommending for you.
His jaw set grimly, he strides off, leaving Simmons and the men gaping. Griff's weathered gaze flickers uncomfortably. Cowboy leans close.
Griff, how about trying to square Simmons, huh?
Oh, this is a pretty rusty song.
Simmons was a stupid jerk. Break it up.
The dark-haired Simmons bows his head as the men slowly disperse, leaving him with Griff.
So you knocked down a nip, huh?
That's right, Captain.
What kind?
Well, it was only a light observation. I don't know. I thought I was doing the right thing.
Where did you go to school?
Harvard Business School.
What did your plane cost?
In the airman's leaky thatched hut, one pilot accidentally dumps in water from the roof.
Let's watch it, Black. Take it easy.
Sorry, engine.
Mud marines pass by.
Why, guys, I sure got it easy. What a break. Imagine, sleeping undercover.
Cowboy wears his pants as a rain hat.
The lieutenant made it funny.
Thank you, and good night, lieutenant.
An offshore Japanese battleship opens fire on the base. Half-dressed men scramble for cover as artillery shells explode among the palm trees near the transport plane. Armed mud marines wearing helmets scurry through the camp. Smoke billows from the enemy ships discharging guns. An explosion rocks the transport plane. Airmen take cover in muddy ditches. Major Kirby somersaults into one, then gets to his feet and glances urgently around. Griff and Simmons dive into another ditch. The damaged transport plane bursts into flame. Kirby watches with disgust. Other airmen hide with a mud marine.
You guys get this kind of treatment every night?
Not every night, sir. They didn't come down the slot last Thursday night.
A mud marine huddles with Kirby.
Hope we still have his nip for you in the morning, Major.
Get under this.
Thanks, Lunch.
Clancy hands Malatki a helmet and leaves the ditch.
Hey, Cowboy! Let's get off the deck and get upstairs!
From another ditch, Cowboy waves him down as shells explode all around them. The burning transport plane suffers a direct hit and disappears in black smoke. Malatki cowers. A shell lands in his ditch, leaving only his helmet. Billy Castle prays, peering up through the rain and smoke. Later, dozens of mud marines charge out as the smoke clears. The transport plane burns fiercely. A Wildcat lies upside down, its wings smashed. Two marines holding fire extinguishers stand on the transport plane's broad wing and spray the flames raging from its shattered fuselage. A third marine joins them. On the ground, others shovel dirt onto the flames. Later, Griff stands by the untouched infirmary as his dazed, rain-soaked men straggle up one by one. The Major joins them.
Count them off.
All right. Fine.
Buddies greet one another as Cowboy runs up.
Hey, you made it. How are you?
Good, yeah. Boy.
With broad, relieved grins, they gather around Griff. The captain counts them, pointing at each man in turn. His grin fades. He glances urgently around. Major Kirby rejoins them, bringing a set of muddy dog tags.
Malotki.
Never knew what hit him.
What a guy. Now he won't even get a chance to click what they owed him.
He never even got off the deck.
Hit the sack, you guys. You'll need some sleep.
The men grimly disperse. Griff rubs his chin.
He's the nicest guy in the squad. Of course, you never got to know him.
Get some sleep, Griff.
Kirby joins the doc in the infirmary and stares down at Malotki's tags.
I knew him. I knew a whole squadron of him at Midway. I knew him all right.
Morning. In the clearing, Mud Marines cast long shadows as they pass a row of Wildcats warming for takeoff. Nearby, a vehicle tows away the burned-out transport plane. Pilots climb into their cockpits, sporting leather helmets with headphones, life vests, and sidearms. Major Kirby settles into his plane. The first one ready, the Major taxis onto the airstrip and takes off. He peers down through his goggles and watches another Wildcat taxi out, then soar into the air. A third follows, and a fourth. On the ground, Griff shields his eyes from the dust. Later, five Wildcats fly over the sea. In the cabin cockpits, Ernie glances at his instrument panel. Major Kirby stares intently ahead. Engine Charlie swallows nervously, and Jorgie smirks confidently. In the fifth plane flies the boyish-faced Pudge McCabe. Ernie glances queasily across at his commander, then picks up his handset.
Jigsaw 1, this is Jigsaw 4. My engine's running rough. I'm returning to base.
Jigsaw 1 to Jigsaw 4. Negative. Stay with us as long as you can.
One plane starts to drift behind the others.
Jigsaw 1, this is Jigsaw 4. I can't keep up. My engine's still running rough. I'm returning to base. Over.
Jigsaw 1, a roger.
Pudge, listening in his headphones, watches Ernie's plane peel off from the flight. His jaw clenches angrily. Now, Engine Charlie spots six Japanese fighters below.
Tally-ho! Bandits! 10 o'clock low. 2 miles.
Pudge pulls down his goggles.
Jigsaw, commencing attack.
Two of the four Wildcats roll to their right, then straighten out in a shallow, fast dive toward the enemy planes. Kirby grits his teeth. Behind him, Jorgie stares determinedly ahead. The others join in as the enemy planes split into two groups. Kirby squares off with 1-0, which opens fire on him. Kirby fires back. His bullets pierce the canopy and kill the pilot. Fire streams from the Zero's engine. Kirby watches his kill plummet. Above him, Jorgie chases another Zero, firing the six guns mounted in his wing's leading edges. He hits it. The diving Zero trails a tongue of fire. Pudge attacks another enemy. His glowing tracer bullets strike the Zero's fuselage, blowing off a chunk. Engine Charlie makes an attack dive, dispatching a fourth Zero. Now Kirby chases another. It bursts into flames. Kirby pulls back on his throttle stick, rising up to join two of his squad. The fourth Wildcat flies away. Kirby picks up his radio.
Jigsaw 4, get back in formation.
It's Jorgie. He engages the 6-0 as it dives toward the island mountains. His eyes gleam. He hits it. Now another enemy plane appears high up and dives straight for him. Kirby watches in horror as the Zero chases Jorgie.
Jigsaw 4, they're on your trail.
The Japanese pilot opens fire. Jorgie's Wildcat is hit. Flames engulf his cockpit as the Zero fires again. Jorgie slides open his cockpit canopy, climbs out, and jumps. His burning plane spirals out of control, plunging into a nosedive. It crashes in an island jungle. Nearby, Jorgie's parachute drifts downward. In the jungle, a Japanese patrol sees Jorgie land. He dangles from a palm tree. He spots the patrol and draws his pistol. The soldiers shoot back, killing him instantly. Blood trickles from his mouth as he sways limply. Later, at the base.
Well, the way I figure it, Jorgie might have made it. He bailed out at 12,000 feet, about 3 miles north of the beach. The wind was about 15 knots to the east. And with any luck, why, he might have hit the island.
Well, if he did, I hope the natives find him first.
Charlie's right.
Billy.
He could have made it with a little luck.
We haven't had any luck so far. Why should it change now?
Man, who could win a war without coffee?
Who's winning what war?
Sergeant Clancy runs up with a covered pan.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Is it anybody's birthday?
All right, what's the gag?
I found a cake.
What do you mean you found a cake?
Yeah. Where'd you find it? In some deserted galley?
Certainly not. It was cooling over at the artillery mess.
What do you know? It is a cake.
I suggest you eat it in a hurry. A slight beef may develop any minute.
Cowboy cuts it.
Now, where would them guys in the artillery get the stuff to make a thing like that? They must have influence.
Want a piece, Clancy?
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you. Old, ugly, and mean. But his honesty's never been questioned.
It's never even been mentioned.
As Cowboy hands out pieces of the sheet cake, Major Kirby and Griff show up with somber expressions.
Thanks a lot. Good.
I want everybody to go over to Graves Registration. The Mud Marines just brought in Jorgensen's body. I want you to take a good long look. And remember what you've seen the next time you feel like going hunting on your own.
Simmons and the others frown and stare at the ground. Cowboy throws down the cake knife.
You heard what the man said.
Getting to his feet, he trudges away. The rest slowly follow, stone-faced in their dirty flight suits. Griff walks with Kirby.
You didn't win any friends back there, but you certainly influenced people.
Two divisions set up for this afternoon's strike.
You made your point, Dan. The object lesson was brutal.
And you're making your point by your tone of voice. You disapprove.
The wet blanket could have waited. Clancy saved that cake to give him a lift.
Well, let Clancy win the popularity contest. We got a different job.
Look, Dan, I know we can't have him pulling out of formation, and you were right about the court-martial for Simmons. Otherwise, they'd wind up the same as Jorgensen.
No, I was wrong about the Simmons thing. And now your wet nursing him's going to come in handy. Go on back and tell him you talked me out of the court-martial.
I don't get the change of pace.
Between jungle fever and Japs, we're going to run out of pilots soon enough. And anyway, they've had a better object lesson now than Simmons.
Griff's narrowed gaze watches Kirby go. The captain heads in the opposite direction. In the clearing, Kirby finds Pudge McCabe cleaning his plane's propeller hub.
McCabe?
Yes, Major?
I'm rearranging divisions. Ernie's going to fly on your wing.
Well, whatever you say is the word, of course, sir. But do you think it's good for morale to make a section when the guys don't like each other?
You don't like Ernie.
About Ernie as a person, I'm neither hot nor cold. I just don't like guys who have rough engines.
The major nods.
Order rescinded.
Major, by making this beef, have I got myself in trouble with you?
Bud, you just keep speaking plain English to me, and we'll get along fine.
Kirby moves on to Ernie at his plane.
Got a new chassis on it.
Ernie?
Yes, sir?
I've had to reorganize since losing Jorgensen. You're going to fly on my wing.
Major, my engine was running rough.
If you say it was rough, it was rough.
I got $100 to 50 that says some of the guys refused to fly with me.
You're on my wing.
Hey, Major?
Kirby looks back.
You know, it'd be easy for me to claim that my engine was rough.
You're telling me that, you're going to get a court-martial. And I'll lose a good pilot.
Good pilot? Major, does a good pilot get so scared he breaks out in a sweat on a mission? His mouth gets so dry he can't...
Every one of them.
You?
The second I push that throttle forward. And any time you meet a guy who says he doesn't, avoid him. He's an idiot. See you, Ernie.
Ernie grins.
You got yourself a wingman, Major. Thanks.
In the sleeping hut, a scowling airman sits up on his cot.
What are you doing, painting my portrait, Simmons?
Just practicing a little exterior decoration, Junior. I'll be catching up with you soon.
Hey, fellas.
Hi, Griff.
Come here, I got news for you.
The men gather around Griff.
There's a tropical front with a thermodynamically warm cumulonimbus hydrometers moving east at 13 knots, longitude 170.
Why, that's absolutely fascinating. What do you want us to do, jump up and down and kick our heels?
Maybe you should. It means the Jap bases are socked in. They can't get a plane off the ground for 24 hours.
Billy grins.
I'm going to get myself a neat, sweet 24-hour sleep.
In that case, it's a bath in a tenor room. The Seabees are beginning to sniff whenever they get downwind of me.
All pilots report to the operations hut.
Oh.
The men glare at Clancy.
Clancy,
brought in a good nose and his life better.
Slowly, they file out and make their way to another low hut with sandbag walls and a canvas awning. Inside, Major Kirby waits with a Mud Marine officer in fatigues and a steel helmet. Spread on the sloping wall are two red cloth panels, 5 feet long, and a large cloth arrow with a yellow head and a red stem.
Colonel Riley and his battalion have hit a snag. They want an assist from us. Now we're going in a little different method of attack this time, which the colonel will explain.
Riley steps forward.
My outfit is pinned down by a heavy concentration of machine gun emplacements just below the top of the ridge. We need some help. Our front lines are marked by intermittent panels, like these.
He indicates the red panels.
100 yards to the rear, you'll see this arrow. If possible, your run should be made parallel to our lines. Exactly at 1340, my mortar crews will outline the target area. We're counting on you to kick the door open.
And that's just what we'll do, Colonel. We'll come in from seaward, hugging the deck, and holding our fire until we're right on top of them. Did you say something?
No, sir. Well, yes, sir. This mission comes as a surprise to me. There was a bright rumor about a vacation.
Well, in this racket, you believe 1% of the bright rumors and 200% of the dark ones, and you'll win most of your bets. I know you fellas haven't been trained for close support. So observe my first run. I'm coming in at treetop level, and I don't want to see anybody above me. Just remember, those guys need our help. And we can't do them any good unless we come in low. Questions?
Yes, sir. If we're going to be that close to the deck, sir, I'd like to get a bayonet on my propeller hub.
Well, that might be pretty hard to rig. But if you'll hop in the jeep with the colonel here and go to the forward area as our observer, I'm quite sure somebody will hand you a bayonet with a rifle attached to it, and you may get a chance to use it. That's an order.
Cowboy smirks uncomfortably.
Colonel? Thank you, Major. See you, man.
The colonel looks down at Cowboy's colorful leather boots.
Texas. Sir.
Cowboy follows him out.
Carry on.
Outside, the colonel gets into a waiting jeep. Cowboy jumps in back. Griff joins Kirby.
Yeah, brother-in-law. That idiot making high school jokes in the briefing session. I'll eat him out when he gets back.
Well, you should. It's your fault he's acting the way he is. This come bring your troubles to pop attitudes. What's making them all act like a bunch of college kids?
Well, that's what they are.
Not out here they aren't. This is where we separate the men from the boys.
I'm still saying what I think until you tell me to shut up. Here it is. This is no time to be playing eager beaver to prove a pet theory. These guys rate arrest.
Nobody rates arrest out here.
Kirby spots Billy Castle without a life vest.
Why isn't Castle in flying gear?
I scheduled Black in his place. Castle's been throwing up too much. The kid's high strung.
Castle
and he's
flies.
Got...
Nobody's ducking these missions because of belly aches. We're all sick.
Sergeant Clancy trots up.
We don't have to gas by hand no more, Major. I rigged up a pump from a dishwashing machine.
A dishwashing machine?
Yeah. Imagine them CBs over in the Mobile Field Kitchen having a dishwashing machine. What's the Navy coming to? Can't wash dishes with their hands?
At the rate we're going, Clancy, we'll be able to refuel with an eyedropper. Can't you put a few more in the air?
My conscience even bothers me about a couple of these you're taking on this mission.
Hey, you fly guys.
Major.
You fly guys got your own galley?
No.
We'd with the Mud Marines.
Why?
I'm checking out a galley. Some joker stole my dishwasher.
Somebody stole his dishwasher. Maybe he just goofed off. What's the guy look like?
Hey, the guy's a machine.
A machine? For washing dishes?
Yeah.
Has everybody gone nuts? Have you ever had anything so crazy, Major?
Never did.
I have. It's part of a Mobile kitchen unit. It's checked out to me. If I find a guy...
Did you look in the artillery, miss? Them artillery men steal. No weapons. They're over in that area.
Clancy's eyes dart under the curled brim of his campaign hat. At a Wildcat, an electric pump drives a fuel hose.
Clancy!
Kirby grins.
I'm beginning to worry about your chances in the hereafter.
Does the Major mean the Major approves of the use of dishwashing machines with amphibious assault groups?
The Major means that the Major approves of line chiefs who can improvise.
Clancy studies the belt-driven pump in the back of his jeep. He pushes a lever. The crewman fueling the plane nods. Clancy tweaks the lever again and smiles proudly. In the wilderness outside the base, a battle rages. Mud Marines lie on a scrubby hillside where the cloth arrow points uphill. from a nearby boulder-strewn ridge, camouflaged Japanese soldiers fire machine guns as Marines scurry for cover, helping their wounded to safety. A grenade dusts an enemy machine gun nest. As the smoke clears, Japanese soldiers hurriedly flee the ridge. Mud Marines charge toward the red panels marking the front line.
Here they come.
High in the sky cruises a flight of Wildcats, their dark gray fuselages emblazoned with a striped star insignia. Marines at the front fire their rifles as high above them, four Wildcats roll left in formation and dive. On the ground, the helmet-clad cowboy scurries behind a fallen tree trunk with three Mud Marines.
You a fly guy?
Yeah.
Major Kirby pilots his Wildcat low over the front line and strafes the boulder-strewn enemy ridge. Dirt clouds billow as Kirby zooms away into the sky. Cowboy watches from his cover as Griff's Wildcat comes in low, 30 feet off the deck, and dusts the ridge. Griff sighs with relief.
Can't fly much lower than that, can you? Only if you're a bachelor.
Ernie comes in low on the same run, his eyes fixed on the target as he fires his wing-mounted guns, then swoops away. Now Kirby returns and drops a bomb onto the enemy ridge. Back at the front line, a Mud Marine next to Cowboy fires a machine gun. The airman flinches under his large, wobbly helmet. Billy Castle starts his strafing run. An enemy machine gunner hits his plane. Flames engulf the cockpit as Billy struggles to pull the Wildcat out of its nosedive. The ground rushes up. The plane explodes on impact. Griff watches from the air and grimaces. Later, at the Marine airfield, a Jeep brings Colonel Riley and Cowboy to Major Kirby, who leads them into a hut.
In here, Colonel. The reason we were late, we tangled with some Zeros on the way to the target. How'd it work out?
Could have been tragedy. We thought you weren't coming, and one of my patrols overran the panel.
Well, that's what we've been screaming for. We need better coordination between ground and air. Did we hit any of your men?
You didn't. Can you make another run at it?
That we will. How about 1,500?
Fine. I'll get an okay from the old man.
Griff comes in and slams down a coffee mug. On it, above a Wildcat logo, is the name Billy.
Billy Cass. How many of us have jungle nausea?
Almost everybody.
Cass will have it any worse than anybody else?
No.
We lost Castle today. Schedule another mission. 1,500. Same target.
Kirby fixes Griff with a steely gaze.
Roger.
Griff glares.
Will I take your observer along?
Major, get me airborne. It's too rough down here with these ground guys.
Flying scares me.
I'll send you up another man.
Right.
Colonel Riley walks out, leaving Cowboy with Major Kirby.
You know, Major, the strafing runs looked really great. If the target had been right, you'd have clobbered that nip position and the Mud Marines would have been off and running. Why don't they use this close ground air all the time?
Because the brass hasn't been convinced yet. Griff will probably want you on this strike.
Yes, sir. Well, why hasn't the brass been convinced?
I don't know. My grandfather claimed there'd never be a horseless carriage.
Two divisions warming up.
Good. You take Cowboy on your wing, I'll take Ernie on mine. I'll lead the run.
Griff leaves with Cowboy. Kirby watches them go, then picks up Billy's mug and gazes thoughtfully at it. Nearby, Doc Curran shaves, soberly watching Kirby. Later, Sergeant Clancy drives up in a Jeep loaded with canvas bundles and a wooden crate. Kirby comes out of a hut.
Found a couple of tents. Three of them, to be exact. We sure can use them. Where do you want them rigged?
Well, any place in the area.
You'll find there's a small hole in the side. Them artillery gyrenes came over claiming they were their tents. They claimed that where the hole is, the serial number should have been. So I said, prove it. Otherwise, knock it off.
Very intelligent attitude, Clancy. Thanks.
Kirby saunters off.
There's officers. Then again, there's officers.
A uniformed MP comes up.
Sergeant!
Yeah. There's a supply truck parked over there about an hour ago. 10 Coleman lanterns are missing out of it. Got any ideas that might help?
Don't quote me, you understand, but I saw some of them Seabees over there this afternoon. They're down in that area.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Clancy sneers at the MP's back.
Copper.
He drives off. Later, Cowboy greets his buddies in a lantern-lit tent. He brings two bottles of sake. Clancy holds another.
Clancy found it. He says he found it.
One of them mud marines gave me a big beat. Said he had it stashed up in back of a palm tree after he took it off a NIP officer, which he killed.
I gave him a smash and a kiss of this mud marine, that is. He was smaller than me.
Them guys are lying about anything.
Sake, huh? Now, you gentlemen know the regulations. Beware of booby traps, particularly food stuff or potable.
Potable?
That means booze, gentlemen.
I think we can find a little regulation that'll allow us to open the bottle.
Cowboy stands on a chair.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a cowboy. Whoa, what are you...
Cowboy bites off the cap and sniffs.
You know, this stuff could be booby trap.
He takes a gulp. His eyes bug out. He swallows hard.
It is.
In the spacious room-sized officer's tent, Major Kirby sits at a desk, brooding over Billy Castle's possessions. His mug, a ring, and a billfold. Inside the billfold is a photo of Billy's parents and a U.S. Marine Corps ID card showing the fresh-faced recruit. Kirby props up the ID and turns his attention to a half-finished letter to Mr. and Mrs. Castle, informing them of Billy's death. Clancy comes in with a kid's record player.
Major?
Fix it?
Fix it. Better and brand new.
He takes a record from his pocket.
Quite a clam bake they're having over there. They're really sopping up on that tacky. You ought to go
Thanks,
over.
Thanks, Clancy.
Kirby takes the record.
Yes?
Clancy hastily leaves. The major glances over his shoulder, making sure that Clancy's gone. His chiseled, careworn features relax into a soft smile as he places the 7-inch white disc onto the turntable. He turns it on and carefully positions the needle at the edge of the spinning disc.
Dear Dad, this is for you at Christmas, wherever you may be. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hello, Major. Dad, this is for you and all the Fly Guys. And the Mud Marines. And you.
We miss you.
And it's hard to say goodnight when you are here.
The Major notices Doc Curran standing behind him.
Father. I didn't mean to reach over your shoulder, Dan.
That's all right, Joe.
But listening to that kid made me feel like the man of my favorite story.
My kid sent me that for last Christmas. It caught up with me at Midway. I've been carrying it around with me ever since. Kind of childish, I guess.
I don't think it's childish. Do me a favor?
What?
Play it again.
Kirby starts winding it up, but the handle breaks off.
Busted again.
You bet. Have a belt?
No, thanks.
That's a prescription. Major?
Kirby greets Clancy with the record player and its broken handle.
There's a headquarters messenger outside to see you, sir.
Send him in.
Yes, sir. Major, if it's about those missing tents, and this ain't one of them, remember, you've seen me.
You've had them for years.
Hey, you.
A Marine steps inside.
General, I'd like to see you immediately, sir.
Right away.
Yes, sir.
Standing, the Major gathers his cap and fatigue jacket. After he goes, Sergeant Clancy approaches Doc Curran.
I hope the Major don't forget. As you know, as far as them tents are concerned...
I know you're pure as a driven snow.
Yes, sir.
At the General's tent.
Good evening.
Sit down, Kirby.
The Major grins at the heavyset General's rocking chair.
All the comforts are home.
Yeah. Some sergeant scared that up for me. He wears an old campaign hat.
The name couldn't have been Clancy.
Yeah, that's the name. Two new squadrons are coming in tomorrow, and 12 replacement aircraft are being ferried in for you.
Thanks. I can sure use them.
Dan, like you, I've always claimed that air ground support can put the foot soldier on the enemy real estate faster than any other tactic. And that's just how much faster the war will be won. We've got to prove our point here. You made a good start today. unless I absolutely need you, your squadron will be exempted from flying interception missions. Work with the infantry.
And after we prove the tactic, the information will go through channels, and we'll probably use it in the next war, or the one after that.
Major Kirby, are you criticizing the standard procedure of the armed forces?
Not at all, sir.
The general grins.
Me too. Good night, Dan.
Good night, General.
They shake hands, and Kirby walks out. The general settles heavily into his rocking chair with a pensive frown. Kirby returns to the lantern-lit officer's tent, where Doc Curran lies in his cot under a rolled-up mosquito net. The 50-ish doctor sits up.
Why don't you hit the sack?
Because I gotta write a letter.
You've been in this game long enough to know that those things should be left to the chaplain. Let the padre write them.
He was killed today on the ridge with the infantry.
What drivel.
Suppose I told the truth. What if I said your son is suffering from jungle nausea and malaria and ordered into the air by a commander who couldn't send him to sick bay?
Dan, I prescribed that drink for you.
I don't want it. Operation Cactus. This ought to be called Operation Shoestring.
Griff drunkenly stumbles in, his arms spread like wings.
I am loaded. And don't you like that, Doc? It's got a very high octane rating.
He squints blearily at Kirby.
Why don't you get some sleep, my tough commandant?
You'll need oxygen for that hangover in the morning.
And we haven't any more oxygen.
In that case, I will suffer.
With Kirby's help, Griff rolls onto his cot.
Good night, tough guy.
The major irritatedly unrolls Griff's mosquito net for him.
He'll suffer.
Griff closes his eyes. Morning. Griff sits on the edge of his cot, staring blankly at the flight schedule chalkboard on his lap. Doc Curran picks up his bag and starts out, then pauses.
Proverbial penny.
I wasn't thinking about anything.
That's a psychological impossibility. The human mind's never at rest, even while sleeping. The mind works.
You want me to lie down on the couch and tell you my dreams? I can tell you sitting up. I dream of scheduling a mission where all the pilots and all the planes come out even. Or you have blank number of operational planes and blank number of available pilots. Everything's even. Good pilots, good planes. There's nothing to decide. Everybody flies. And even Major Daniel Xavier Kirby can't work up a lather.
I don't think Dan started this war, Griff. Even if he did, I don't think he did it on purpose.
Can't help feeling sorry for Castle.
Don't you think Dan does?
Griff forcefully scribbles a name on the chalkboard.
Dan's a mighty man. The classic commander. Come home with your shield or on it. I got work to do.
Standing, he takes the chalkboard and goes out. The doc gazes soberly after him. Later.
Oh, Dan.
Doc Curran stops Kirby.
I think there's a problem building up for you. Griff's got the jumps.
I know. Well, he's the best man in the squadron. I don't know what the outer edge of his endurance is, but I've got to use him.
I ought to be getting $80 an hour for this.
For what?
Of course, I'd have to grow a little beard and have an office in the swankiest part of town.
If you've got something to say, now's the time.
Griff's identifying you as the villain. It's your fault this whole air operation has enough men or equipment.
Knock it off, Dr. Freud. After this is over, Griff and I'll go out and get knee walking tight and forget it. I got a mission to fly.
Both men grin. Later, a cruising formation of four Wildcats rolls one by one. They stand up on one wing and dive. In the haze high above the ocean, the American planes encounter a lone Japanese Zero fighter. It comes in fast from the side. The pilot fires. Bullets riddle Engine Charlie's fuselage and rip through his right thigh. As he flies with one hand, his tanned face contorts in pain.
Jigsaw 4, this is Jigsaw 1. How badly are you hit?
Badly hit on the knee. My engine is losing RPM. Over.
This is Jigsaw 1. Return to base immediately. All Jigsaw planes, this is Jigsaw 1. Simmons, join on Shorty. All other planes, join on me. Out.
Engine Charlie's plane trails a stream of black smoke. One Wildcat follows him. Later at the airfield, Sergeant Clancy spots the incoming planes. his crewmen grab fire extinguishers. Engine Charlie clutches his bloody leg while holding his plane in a steady descent to the airstrip. Breathing shallowly, he winces in pain as his plane comes in. Charlie grips the stick with both gloved hands. The plane touches down safely, then hits something and skids on its nose until it stops in a cloud of dust, its propeller blades contorted. Ground crewmen race to the plane. One sprays the engine with a fire extinguisher. Others try to pull the weak Charlie from his cockpit. Later, Charlie awakens on an infirmary cot. Sweat glistens on his lean face. Doc Curran shows Major Kirby in. The major lifts the side of the cot's mosquito net shroud, then kneels down by the young airman's side.
Hello, Charlie. How you making?
Pretty rugged, Major. I don't feel like there's anything missing. I guess I'm still all doped up.
That transport sneaks in tonight. We're going to get you started stateside.
That's fine. Say, Major.
Yes.
Write a letter for me, will you?
Sure. Your folks?
Well, yes. Send it to Mr. Peters, the Indian agent. Monument Valley, Navajo Reservation. He'll read it to them. See, they can't read.
What'll I write, Charlie?
You write it, Major. Just say what happened to me. But I still have the other leg. Say it your way. Tell them that they might just as well sell those clothes as they were racing for me to break. I don't guess I'll be busting many broncs from here on in. I guess the automobile is sure to replace the horse, eh, Major?
I wrote you up for a citation, kid, not that it matters much.
I understand, Major.
Just relax. Doc will give you something to help you go to sleep.
The major stands and lowers the mosquito netting over Charlie's cot. He looks down, hangs his hands on his hips, then turns away. Charlie's sweat-drenched gaze follows Kirby past the row of beds. Later, the pilots return to their tent after the mission.
Caught your slipstream and dropped my wing. I didn't think I could pull out.
I'm a bachelor. But going in this low is strictly for the bird.
I swear one of those jokers was throwing rocks at me.
Next time I'm going out on my back. Make sure I see the ground.
You know, we'd have covered each other yesterday like we did today. Maybe Charlie wouldn't have gotten knocked down.
Cowboy runs in.
We could have used Charlie, couldn't we?
Sure could, Cowboy.
In the commander's tent.
Hey, you lost up the scheduling of these two missions. You got the older guys flying this tough ground strike. And the replacements are flying cover for a bomber mission. That's a milk run. Let's switch it.
No, send the replacements on the milk run. The older guys have had some ground strike experience.
They've also had it tougher than the law allows.
That they have. But I didn't make the rules. I only live by them. Maybe I did make one mistake. You ought to go with a bomber group. That'd give them a commander who understands combat. Give you a little command experience. Pick out one of the replacements to take your place on the ground strike.
Griff's sober gaze flickers. He ambles over to a desk and picks up a sheet of paper.
Well, let's see. I haven't got any training reports on these guys yet. I don't know which one of them's had the most air support training. Let's leave it the way it is. I'll fly the ground strike with you.
Sure, you'll fly the ground strike with us. You'll be with the decisions I make, but you're too soft to make them yourself. You just can't bring yourself to point your finger at a guy and say, go get killed. You gotta tear your guts out worrying about his flight record. Or because some dame back in the States has given him the brush off. Or whether he knows whether his baby's born yet or not. You got enough troubles of your own for one man. Stop trying to pack everybody else's around. Schedule that mission.
Roger.
Griff heads out. He spins back inside and whips the tent flap closed.
I got a belly full. And I'm not buying the bill of goods you're selling. In my book, it's easy to be a turtle. To put a shell between yourself and the rest of humanity. Maybe I'm not making my point clear. 400 years ago, a poet said it better than I ever could. No man is an island. When the funeral bell rings, it isn't just for the dead guy. It's a little bit for all of us. Each man's suffering belongs to everyone. Or else why are we shooting off these guns? And I don't know what your reaction's going to be, but here's what I hope it is. I hope you'll say, let's take off these insignia and step out in the boondocks and get it settled.
They burst out of the tent, but Clancy runs up.
Major, you're wanted at General Headquarters right away, sir.
Kirby glares fiercely, holds his breath, then strides away.
The pilots think they're going to be relieved right away. Is that true?
Definitely not.
In the general's tent, Kirby joins other officers.
Kirby?
Yeah?
The general reclines in his rocking chair.
Gentlemen, the biggest Jap convoy ever sighted is heading down the slot. Flat tops, cruisers, cans, transports and barges full of Jap reinforcements. This looks like their Sunday punch. We're going to send everything flyable after that force and continue round-the-clock operations until we smash them. The TBFs will carry torpedoes. The dive bombers, 500-pound SAPs, and the fighters, 100-pounders. I know we can do it. Thank you, gentlemen. That will be all. Let's get the show on the road.
As the other officers disperse, Kirby shakes off a pensive gaze and gets up.
Major Kirby.
He stops.
Dan, your outfit is head of the roughest, but this calls for everything we've got.
I understand, sir.
I knew you would. Let's hope it won't take too long.
Right, sir.
Kirby walks out, leaving the general gently rocking. Later.
Arnie! I'm making up some jungle juice, Major. Come on over and cut yourself in.
Well, you better save it. We got another mission to fly. Alert the pilots and tell Griff and Curran to come to my quarters.
This'll come as a wet blanket.
I know.
King size.
Now, into each life, a little rain must fall.
Ernie glumly looks down at his tins of canned fruit. On the sun-drenched airfield, ground crewmen use a crane to lower stubby 4-foot-long bombs onto carts. A jeep tows a long train of carts carrying bombs. Crewmen load finger-sized bullets into machine gun cartridges. On the edge of the airstrip, mechanics fasten a Wildcat's engine cowling as Major Kirby strides past.
Simmons!
The pilot kneels on his plane's wing.
You've been doing all right on that catching-up routine, but don't get careless or ace-happy. Live Marine's better than a dead hero.
Yes, sir, Skipper. I've got the word.
Later, Wildcats take off one by one, their wheels retracting as the fighter planes rise into the nearly cloudless sky. A flight of 6 Wildcats reaches cruising altitude. Around them, many other squadrons fill the skies, all heading in the same direction like a massive flock of birds. One Wildcat totes a pair of rockets under each wing and a bomb under its fuselage. We glimpse goggle-wearing pilots, Kirby, Calvin, and Griff. Kirby spots a group of 6 Zeros hugging the water.
And it's 9 o'clock low.
Kirby's flight banks hard left, curving sharply into a shallow attack dive toward the Japanese fighters. Ernie and Kirby fly side by side as they fire their wing guns. A Zero's fuselage bursts into flames. The pilot slumps as his Zero goes into a steep dive. Now, Calvin engages another Zero. His bullets stream behind the speeding plane, then find their mark. The Zero trails a stream of smoke, then fire engulfs its engine. Calvin smiles victoriously and shoots down another plane. He looks to his left. An enemy plane closes from the side. Bullets pierce Calvin's canopy, killing him. As the Wildcat dives in flames, Griff watches, his sweaty face tense. Nearby, Major Kirby watches too, as Calvin's burning plane plummets nose first. Kirby sighs heavily. Later, his remaining planes fly in formation. On the ocean below, a scattered convoy of ships leaves curving wakes.
There it is, boys. The Tokyo Express.
The Major leads his Wildcats in a steep attack dive. Griff fires on a battleship. His glowing tracer bullets arc downward. As the major fires on another ship, bullets pockmark the water around it, sending up plumes of spray. Simmons flies over a battleship and drops his bomb. Four Wildcats bank left together, their square-tipped wings silhouetted against a clear blue sky. Now more American planes join the attack. Two dive bombers let loose their bombs, which explode near a Japanese ship. Another bomb hits the water just behind a ship. Ernie makes a strafing run, peppering a damaged battleship with his machine gun rounds. Another Wildcat fires its rockets. They strike a barge, setting it on fire. Ernie continues his attack on a ship engulfed in smoke. Pudge McCabe joins him, swooping low and unloading a barrage of rounds. A silver TBF Avenger flies low over the water and drops a torpedo from its bomb bay. The torpedo slices below the surface. Cowboy drops his own bomb. It lands abreast of a ship in a geyser of spray. Now Griff unloads his bomb, and another pilot fires off all four rockets. A dive bomber plummets steeply straight toward a Japanese ship, taking a curving, evasive course. The plane's rockets streak down. Aircraft fill the sky like swarming bugs above the besieged convoy. Major Kirby grits his teeth as he strafes a battleship from the side. Ernie drops a bomb. Pudge mercilessly fires his guns at a listing barge. Fiery explosions rack several ships, sending up billowing black smoke. Now Kirby grins and unloads his bomb. A ship explodes in a brilliant yellow and white flash. Under heavy attack, the remaining ships veer off course. The water foams around them, pelted by American bullets. Griff makes an attack dive, gazing coolly as he peppers a fire-ravaged ship. Now, one Wildcat flies alone. It's Simmons. A Japanese Zero attacks from the side. Simmons is hit. His engine flames out. He fights for control. Major Kirby watches grimly as the burning plane dives, with Simmons unconscious inside. Griff spots the Zero under him and chases it. His rounds miss behind the fleeing plane, then strike. Flames flash from the engine's cowling, crippling the propeller. The Zero veers sideways. Meanwhile, Ernie launches his underwing rocket to the ship. It explodes. The Major fires his rockets and obliterates another ship. Kirby gazes around. Below him spreads a scene of destruction, a black smoke pouring into the sky from a dozen burning ships. Sliding up his goggles, he grabs his radio handset.
All Jigsaw planes, this is Jigsaw One. Looks like the show's over for quite a spell. Let's go home.
Later, the surviving Wildcats land at Cactus Airfield, then taxi to the camp. Griff stands on his wing with a relieved grin, watching the others land. The Major climbs out of his cockpit, then slumps weakly against the fuselage. Later in the airman's tent, two mugs hang on pegs under the Wildcats' bullseye logo.
Yeah, there were two Zeros in one of their new modified fighters.
Yeah, and the second Zero came in on Kelvin.
Anybody beside Kelvin and Simmons?
No, that's all.
I was flying Simmons' wing.
I didn't see Sim after he was hit. Anybody see if he got a chance to bail out?
He didn't.
We were going in on the barges, and Simmons banked like
this. I saw him explode while he was trying to open his hood.
Captain Griffin.
You're Martin, the new replacement.
No, Martin, sir. I was flying
Here,
Simmons'
have
wing.
A belt.
I didn't want anybody to think that I...
Don't think.
I just wanted to know if I jumped the sprocket.
You heard the man. Don't think.
Ernie walks away. Cowboy consoles Madden.
Come on, kid. Mix yourself some varnish. Come on.
In the officer's tent, Griff sees Major Kirby packing his belongings.
I suppose you've heard. I've been relieved. Going stateside.
Griff sits at a desk.
Guess they've got another job for me.
sure the rest of the squadron will be relieved in the next couple of days. I guess the guys won't squawk about that, huh? What do you think?
My considered opinion, they're welcome being relieved.
The major narrows his eyes and walks over.
I want to speak some plain English.
Right ahead.
I recommended that you not take over the squadron. You want to know why?
There's no regulation says you owe me an explanation.
In a way, I feel it's my failure. As you know, it's a commander's duty to train the men
under him. Train the men under him for fitness and command. This is all unnecessary, Major. I know the Marine manual as well as anyone, even as well as you. And Section 9 of the manual, the duties of leadership and command.
Kirby offers his hand.
So long, Griff.
So long, Major.
Griff looks away and takes a gulp from his mug. Kirby turns and leaves, taking with him a bag and a Japanese sword. Later, a four-engine passenger plane with an American Star emblem on the side flies high over desert country. Nighttime, a yellow cab pulls up to a one-story house in the suburbs. Major Kirby gets out. Wearing his pressed khaki dress uniform and holding a duffel bag, he walks to the front door. He spots an envelope in the letterbox and picks it up. It's addressed to Major Dan Kirby, USMC. Dan Kirby grins and unlocks the door. In the kitchen, his red-haired wife turns and stares as the major comes inside. He puts down his bag, then sees her.
We can save this, Dan.
Darling, I could divorce you for this, coming home without notice. The girl's entitled to know and time to have her hair done.
You look pretty good to me. Pretty good, that is.
His wife rushes into his arms, closing her eyes in a rapturous grin as they hug. They fall into a long kiss. Arm in arm, the reunited couple walks slowly through the darkened living room. In a bedroom, a blonde, round-cheeked boy of about 7 sleeps as his parents come in. College sports pennants decorate one wall. Dan brings the Japanese sword as he and his wife sit on the edge of their son's bed. His wife switches on a bedside lamp.
Tommy.
Tommy's eyes flicker open. He sits up and eyes his dad.
Hello, Major.
You're a little formal, aren't you? But then it has been a long time.
Tommy, give your father a kiss.
Oh, he's too big to go around kissing men, aren't you, Boot?
Tommy tackles his father.
Oh! Oh!
Surrender?
Unconditionally.
He gives Tommy the sword.
Gee, thanks. How'd you get it? Buy it from some of the mud marines?
I took it off a Jap officer whom I defeated in single combat hand to hand.
Oh, fly guys never get souvenirs. Ground Etourants get all the souvenirs.
He sounds like he's already served a hit.
The neighborhood's full of servicemen's children. They compare notes. We wives do, too.
Was it rough, baby?
Look who's talking. A guy from Guadalcanal.
They just called Canal. You're squatting flying wildcats, Major?
Yep.
Darling, don't call your father Major.
You can call me Colonel pretty soon. Vandergrift said, buy the insignia.
Second Colonel?
Lieutenant Colonel.
Well, it's better than being a mere Major.
Mere? I like that.
Tommy's mother switches his lamp on
and
off.
Oh, Ma.
Lights out.
How about some cocoa, huh? I'm hungry.
No, and no raids in the middle of the night. The kitchen's out of bounds for you.
Well, I could use some cocoa. Then you could bring him a cup.
Your order's countermanded, Mom.
Not even a 4-star general outranks me in this house. But I'll bring you in a cup.
Tommy crawls into bed.
Good night, Boot.
Night, Major. Oh, Colonel.
Tommy waves the curved sword as his mother walks out. Then he jumps out of bed and runs over to his father, who scoops him up in a big hug.
Night, Dad.
Good night, son.
Patting Tommy on the back, Dan puts him down and takes a deep breath. Later in the kitchen.
He was asleep.
His wife's pretty face tightens.
I've been building myself up to ask the $64 question. How long?
Dan's eyebrows go up.
How long what?
Answer me or I'll dent your head.
You're going to have me around for a long time. I have a station job at Goleta.
A station job? Oh, what a beautiful sob. And Galita? A beautiful, hot, dirty little town. Probably have to live on the wrong side of the tracks. Darling, I'll never complain about Galita again.
You're not the complaining type. Are we all buttoned up?
Cat's out. Door's locked.
She switches off the kitchen light.
All secure, sir.
Dan stands and carries her out of the room. Daytime at an airbase among rolling forested mountains. A Corsair fighter plane, single engine with inverted gull wings, comes in for a landing. Now in an office, Dan Kirby enters wearing his dress uniform and tie. An officer sits behind a desk.
Hello, Dan. Sit down.
Dan takes a seat.
How have you been?
Fine, till I got this call from you.
Cigar?
No, thanks. I'm a cigarette man.
Dan, I've just received a dispatch to form a new squadron. It has to be ready for combat in a forthcoming major operation.
I have orders to go to Washington.
We'll get them canceled if you take over this squadron.
Hey, Colonel.
There's a lot of opposition to close air support. Maybe you don't know, but the brass think we can't pinpoint targets without hitting our own ground troops. Which has happened too often in the past, but this time your squadron will be all first team.
Okay, Coach. Put me in, even though I ain't got no headgear.
I've assigned the other pilots who were with you at the canal, and Major Griffin will be your exec.
Dan stares.
Griffin?
Yes. Why?
Nothing.
Okay, Dan. I'd like to see you get flight operations started right away. Maybe there's something to this nonsense about esprit de corps.
I don't speak French, Colonel. So long.
So long.
Out in the hallway, Dan Kirby runs into Major Griffin. They eye each other.
Scuttlebutt has it they're forming a new squadron. With you as CO and me as exec. Is that right?
That's what the man said. Is it okay with you?
Well, I'm not too happy about it. But contrary to popular opinion in certain quarters, I think I can handle the job.
You'll get a chance to prove it.
Later, by a house on the base, Cowboy greets his young son and daughter.
How are you? Hey, Dan, how about coming home and having a drink?
No, thanks, Cowboy.
You know my wife, Virginia, don't you, Dan?
It's been a long time.
Hello, Dan. Meet Jack and Jill.
Hey, Jack looked like he'd already tumbled down the hill.
He's got a black eye.
Jack ran into a haymaker from Jill.
You sure you won't come home and have a drink with us?
Joan's cooking dinner.
Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing Joan. I'll be by and see her tomorrow.
Good.
Cowboy for you. And the cowgirl for Griff.
Ernie, Pudge, and another airman sit in Cowboy's car.
See you, Skipper.
Dan waves as they drive off. Inside his house, his wife Joan paints Lieutenant Colonel Dan Kirby on his Navy duffel bag.
There's a strange man in the house. Anybody want to kiss him?
Mm-hmm.
Joan grins brightly. Dan comes into the living room and kneels to share a kiss.
What goes?
Oh, I'm putting Lieutenant Colonel on all your gear so you won't lose it while you're traveling.
You know more than you've been officially told.
Spies should concentrate on wives. They always know what's going on any base.
Maybe I've been finding it hard to tell.
That you turned down Washington to get a squadron? That shouldn't be hard to tell me.
Well,
it's as simple as this. They wanted the best. The best is Colonel Kirby. I understand.
Her smile fades. Dan gently kisses her cheek.
No wonder those beautiful gals on those lovely tropic isles couldn't tempt me.
I've seen pictures of those isles and the gals. Are you telling me you love me?
Right.
Why don't you just say it?
I love you.
He kisses her. Joan gazes tightly away.
Glad I didn't marry one of those burst into tears dames.
What good are tears? Excuse me.
Joan gets up from her seat and goes into the kitchen. Colonel Kirby picks up the paintbrush and continues lettering his name. Behind him, the kitchen screen door opens.
Hey, Mom, I have 4 cents to buy up. Hey, why are you crying?
Take a walk, darling.
Tommy comes into the living room.
Hey, Dad, Mom's crying. When I asked her why, she said take a walk.
Then maybe we better take a walk, kid.
Kirby takes his son's hand and walks into the front door. Tommy goes outside. Kirby pauses, gazing pensively around the elegant living room.
Come on, Colonel!
Brow furrowed, he joins his son. At sea, on a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier, dozens of Corsair fighter planes are readied for takeoff. Their wings drop down from the fuselage and then angle upward to the tips. One by one, the 30-foot-long planes are catapulted into the air. Later, a squadron of Navy blue Corsairs flies high in flights of four. At an airfield, the Corsairs come in for a landing one by one. Behind a cluster of pavilion-like tents lie several wrecked Japanese fighter planes with mangled landing gear and bent propellers. Now, Colonel Kirby climbs out of the cockpit of his parked Corsair. Clancy runs up.
Hello, Major. Glad to have you aboard, sir.
Happy to be aboard, Sergeant.
Sorry. PFC.
MPs?
MPs.
Clancy, wearing a green cap and an unbuttoned shirt with only one stripe on his sleeve, escorts the colonel past the destroyed Zeros toward one of the tents. Later, Kirby and Griff wait inside. The colonel from Goleta walks in.
Hello, Griff.
Hello, Colonel.
Dan?
Could have expected to see you here.
They sent me along for the ride. I got my orders the day after you left. Well, this is what we asked for.
He unfolds a map on a table.
47th Marines have hit a stone wall and haven't been able to keep up with the advance. Hill 708 here is a solid arsenal of Jap artillery, mortars, and machine guns. Our troops are on three sides.
300 meters, that's pretty close.
That's what you were trained for. Just make your runs accurate and stay on the target. You've got to flatten their position, but fast.
How fast?
Air control's waiting to brief you.
Let's go.
Now, officers wearing radio headsets arrange colored pieces on a table representing ground forces. High in the sky, the Corsairs hold their formations. On the ground, a battle rages among dusty, barren hills. Under Japanese mortar fire, a line of American tanks advances, accompanied by dozens of Marines on foot. Other soldiers line a trench and fire shouldered bazookas. In a jeep parked near the front, a Marine holds a map and a radio handset.
Red Rock 1, Red Rock 1, this is Ant Paste, this is Ant Paste.
Hello, Ant Paste, this is Red Rock 1.
Jap emplacements in target areas, 3726, 3727, 3824, 3825. Make continuous attacks until all ordnance is expended. Attack north to south. We'll mark target area with white phosphorus and red smoke. Are you in a position to observe? Over.
Affirmative, out.
Marines crawl among bare, uprooted trees. A U.S. tank fires at a Spanish mission house on a hillside. White and red smoke spreads around the enemy soldiers on its arched roof.
Red Rock 1, this is Ant Paste. Commence attack when in position. Out.
Kirby flies low and fires two underwing rockets at the enemy hill. They explode in a cloud of dirt. Griff's Corsair follows close behind and unloads two more. As the next Corsair approaches, enemy soldiers hiding among boulders fire their machine gun. Ernie's rockets bury them. Now a Marine soldier watches from the front.
Any closer, those guys will be using bayonets instead of propellers.
A Corsair makes a deck-hugging attack pass, bombing the mission house with deadly accuracy. Two more planes follow. From his bubble cockpit, Griff spots an incoming Zero. The Japanese pilot comes up behind the unsuspecting Ernie. He misses. Colonel Kirby attacks. Kirby's bullets riddle the enemy's canopy. Griff stares as the Zero plummets in flames, its pilot dead. Now Ernie fires two more rockets at the enemy hillside. Cowboy follows. His twin rockets streak toward us and explode in a dirt cloud. Kirby drops a bomb among a cluster of little hills, sending up a fireball. A Corsair's bomb tumbles to the stone house, engulfing it in smoke and flame. Another bomb lands on the tiny hills among ravaged trees. Now Pudge McCabe bombs the enemy hideout. An orange and black fireball rises into the sky amid thick clouds of white smoke. A Corsair drops a final bomb on the enemy hillside. Smoke pours into the air. Corpses of Japanese soldiers litter the ground amid smoldering underbrush. The Marines charge. Carrying their guns, they hustle up a barren dirt slope. Later, back at camp, Cowboy sits with Griff.
That's the way I feel, so that's what I told him. My mother says if I'm real polite to my commanding officer, I'll be sure to be advanced. Well, in the interest of being polite, I think I'll take a run down to the gunnery course of this far-flung battlefront and check my guns like the man said.
Ernie goes out. Cowboy glances through his mail.
Now, everybody keeps giving advice on how to get along. It's all so simple. The general tells the colonel tells the major tells me. I do it. Every time I go out to do it, though, I'm more scared than I was the time before. Guess it figures. With every mission you fly, your chances get smaller and smaller.
Did you ever hear of Ball's Law of Mathematical Percentages?
Oh, I always flunked math.
This mathematician, Dr. Bald, proved that the percentage possibility of lightning striking twice in the same place is exactly the same as it striking anywhere else.
Oh, maybe you're making some sense, but not to me.
You're taking exactly the same chance as a fellow flying his first mission, no matter how many previous missions you've flown.
Huh. Did they check up real good on this fellow, Bo?
Oh, yes.
You want to hear something funny? Unfortunately, this is from my tailor. Unfortunately, if he receives any future orders for suits for me, he'll have to make them without vests. Because of the material shortage, government restrictions.
He crumples the letter.
Boy, what a rough time they must have stateside.
If you feel that jumpy, why don't you go see Doc?
There's nothing the matter with me, Griff. I'm just scared.
Griff looks down.
So am I. But I figure there's no sense in yelling about it. Somebody upstairs is rolling the dice. The guy hasn't any control over what number comes up.
He checks his watch.
Well, it's almost 1400. I've got to go.
Griff, there's one good thing. If my dice stop on 7, you know, Virginia, the kids.
Shut up. It's the same way about you and my book. If my dice stop on a miss-out number. See you later.
Griff strides out of the tent. Now, high above the ocean flies a squadron of planes. Grim-faced Japanese pilots aim their Zeros downward. Glowing anti-aircraft rounds shoot into the sky. An enemy pilot's unflinching gaze locks onto a U.S. aircraft carrier below. The carrier's artillery guns fire salvos at the diving fighters. One Zero crashes into the water. Another flies low, surrounded by American fire as it skims the waves, then hurtles into a carrier. On board, a U.S. officer finds his radio operator.
Direct all fighter aircraft to discontinue present missions and proceed to repel kamikaze attack on the fleet.
Divert all fighters from present missions to repel kamikaze attack on the fleet. Acknowledged.
The ship's cage-like radar antenna slowly revolves. An enemy pilot aims his Zero steeply down. It crashes into a destroyer. The ship shudders with the fiery explosion. Now, inside.
All you all drinking ruby aircraft, this is sourdough. This is urgent. This is urgent. Proceed at once to point X-ray to repel kamikaze attack on fleet. This order supersedes all previous orders. Flight leaders acknowledged. Over.
Colonel Kirby.
Hello, sourdough. This is Red Rock 1 with 8 chicks orbiting at Point Able. We'll proceed as directed.
Out. Major Griffin.
Sourdough. Red Rock 9 with 8 chicks proceeding to X-ray. Out.
Kamikaze, kamikaze, the eyes of Texas are upon you.
Sing on the air once more and I'll eat you up.
Kirby listens with a smile.
All right.
Cowboy stares at one of his instrument dials.
Red Rock 9, this is 12. World temperature in the red. Only turn up 1,800 RPM. Losing RPM steadily. Over.
Red Rock 9. Head back for the field. Out.
Red Rock 12. Roger.
Griff watches over his shoulder as Cowboy's Corsair dips out of formation. cowboy heads back. Glancing nervously around, he spots an incoming Zero. He looks to his right and sees another.
Zeros on my tail. Position 30 miles northwest of Point Zebra. Give me some help. Over.
Griff.
Red Rock 9.
Head for the deck. Take evasive action. I can't help.
Pudge McCabe.
Griff, let me take my section after those Zero.
Cowboy listens nervously.
Get back in formation and stay off the air. Out.
Cowboy puts down his radio and peers behind him. A Zero pilot stares grimly ahead, jaw clenched.
Red Rock 12, mayday, mayday, this is Cowboy veering out over Point Zebra.
He jettisons the canopy.
Red, let me go help.
Shut up, Red 10.
Cowboy stands up on his seat. A Zero closes in. Bullets riddle Cowboy's exposed body. He sinks back into his seat, wincing in agony. An engine fire breaks out. Cowboy struggles to lift himself, but the burning plane crashes headlong into the ocean. High above, Griff breathes heavily, tensing his jaw.
Sourdough. It's Red Rock 9. Angels 8, 7 chicks. Out.
Now the U.S. fleet undergoes attack. One carrier's superstructure burns fiercely. A Kamikaze Zero plummets straight down and crashes into the water between ships. Colonel Kirby's Corsair squadron approaches the fleet. Puffs of shell smoke dot the sky. One by one, four bent-wing Corsairs roll to their right, peeling into steep dives. Kirby fires his guns. He hits a Zero, skimming the waves far below. Its engine catches fire. Flames lick the pilot's canopy. Kirby watches the Zero veer off course. Another Zero, each flat wing marked with a red circle, soars high. Ernie engages it. Its tail bursts into flame. An enemy plane attacks Ernie. Ernie fires back. A Zero banks left, evading him. Now, Griff hits a twin-engine bandit. Fire streams from its left engine. Griff watches intently as the plane plummets to the ocean. Another flaming kill crashes into the deep. A goggle-wearing Corsair pilot blasts a Zero from behind. The enemy pilot tries to see out through the flames raging from his engine. A Corsair's wing-mounted gun barrel spits smoke as they unload on a Zero, which nosedives in flames. Now, Pudge engages another bandit. The Zero rolls to evade the stream of bullets. Pudge's bullets still miss, and the Zero spirals safely away. Next, he attacks a twin-engine plane at close range. He misses again, but Ernie nails it. Now Colonel Kirby spots five enemy twin engines below him. He squeezes the stick trigger. Nothing happens. His Corsair comes up fast behind one enemy plane. Kirby gapes. The two planes collide. His fighter spins out of control.
Bail out, Skipper. Bail out!
Kirby dives out just before the plane blows up. His white parachute descends through a raining barrage of fiery wreckage and exploding anti-aircraft rounds. Dangling below his parachute, Colonel Kirby floats gently downward and lands with a splash in the calm, sparkling ocean. After the battle, the sky is empty over the fleet. On a carrier.
Only eight of our ships were hit, but we're all afloat. Pancake all flyers. Give the boys a well done.
Pancake all fighters. Well done. Well done.
Later.
My division went in on a destroyer.
We stripped. She was burning out.
She was listening to one side as we came out.
And there was a Tugasaki Tech tugboat.
Well, it's two tech.
We stayed in formation.
Well, that's about it, Major.
So we lost a guy we didn't have to. We could have covered.
Save it.
Behind Pudge and Ernie, Griff stares coldly. Clancy enters.
Major Griffin, group commander wants to see you right away, sir.
Right away.
Still in his flight jumpsuit and life vest, Griff gets up from his seat and walks out. Ernie goes out, too, followed by the boyish Pudge, who stands with Ernie just outside the Air Defense Control Center shed.
So I said it. We could have covered Cowboy. What difference would a couple of planes more or less have made in that shindig?
Don't ask me questions. I'm not information, please.
In his tent, Kirby wears an arm cast.
I'll put your gear aboard, sir.
Private Clancy collects Kirby's baggage.
Colonel, if you find a jug in your footlocker, I don't want you to have no false suspicions. I bought it, fair and square, from a transport pilot. I hate to stoop this low, but there was nothing for your going away present lying around loose.
I'm sure this one blot on your record will be overlooked. So long, Clancy.
So long, sir. And I've served under worse skippers.
And I've had worse line chiefs.
The two soldiers share a warm gaze. Clancy carries out the trunk and bag, leaving Kirby with Doc Curran.
If I have to go where there's another war, I hope Clancy will be there. And you too, Doc.
So long, Dan.
So long.
Kirby walks out to a transport plane where ground crewmen load wounded soldiers.
Dan!
Griff catches up at a boarding ladder.
I didn't expect to get the squadron on your recommendation. I thought you were a heel.
I was. You're going to be. I didn't do you any favor, Griff. I'm sorry about Cowboy. I know how tough it is to make a decision like that. You're going to wind up staggering into your bunk every night with your hip pockets dragging. Then you'll lay there and look at the ceiling while your stomach turns over and you hope to God you called every shot right during the day. The next morning you'll wake up, wish you were a flight lieutenant again. So all you'd have to do is what the man told you. And you'll get bad-tempered and snarly just like me. You'll probably wind up just like me, climbing into an aircraft with your hip pockets dragging to go back to some desk job. Brother, I didn't do you any favor.
I'm going to say something dizzy. If and when we meet stateside, will you get drunk with me as my guest?
I'll be happy to come aboard. So long.
So long. I'll try to call the plays right. I had a good coach.
Well, I'll be looking forward to that stateside wing ding.
He climbs into the plane.
So long, Colonel.
So long.
Ernie eyes Griff.
What's this, your CO and I'm exec?
That's right. Get me a status report. Have all the pilots assemble in the briefing room.
Right away?
For the future record, all orders are right away.
Major Griffin leads Ernie and Doc Curran past a grassy mound next to the airstrip. On top, three Marines watch an American flag rise up a flagpole. A squadron of Corsair fighter planes passes low overhead in flights of four. The final flight numbers only three. Fade to black. Over a formation of Wildcats silhouetted by a sunset, words appear. The end. RKO Radio Pictures.